Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Karen Can Radio Show. The intention of this show is to empower and inspire you to manifest the life of your dreams, whether it's radiant health, prosperity, loving relationships, or simply peace of mind. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Can, author of the number one bestseller, Guide to Healing Chronic Pain, A Holistic Approach. And if you do not have a copy of my book, you can get the first six chapters as a free download by putting your name and email address right on my site, KarenCan.com. And I'll also gift to you five of my Fast Track Your Healing webinar online classes absolutely free that you can access at any time. You will get the private link to those classes and the passwords and everything like that so you can access them at any time. And I'm really excited today. You know, I always say that. I know you guys, like, they've been listening to this show, but I do get really, really excited about the guests that I have on the show. And lately, I think over the last year or so, I've been watching some, I'm kind of a documentary junkie, I gotta admit it. I love documentaries, especially about health and wellness and food. And so I kind of come home with these documentaries and say to my husband, oh, honey, can we watch this movie? And he usually is like, oh, you know, because he likes the Hollywood action-packed movies, which I love too. But he'll be like, okay, you know, I just can't do that, like, one after another. I give a little break, we do the regular movies, and then I introduce a documentary. So I was so excited a couple days ago. I found out about this new documentary called What's with Wheat, and it's a great name for the movie because it's easy to remember. So I was like, oh, my gosh, there's a movie about wheat. This is so cool. I just came back from a couple weeks ago meeting with Sally Fallon Morrell of the Weston A. Price Foundation. She came all the way up to the Northeast, to our little town, to give a talk and had a great time with everyone talking about food and ancestral foods and how they make it. And so when I usually introduce the idea to my patients that maybe they need to go gluten-free and to start eating whole foods, usually they kind of look at me with a blank look, like, well, out of two things. Either look at me with a blank look and say to me, I'm going to starve because that's all they're used to eating. Or they look at me and they go, oh, yeah, I can buy gluten-free food. And what I'm thinking is, oh, boy, they're going to reach for the packaged foods that say gluten-free and think that's good. And more and more people I'm discovering have autoimmune issues and, you know, what we call leaky gut. And so I'm trying to explain what it is. It's taking me some time to explain. I try to find some videos online and YouTube. And, you know, and then, you know, my family and some well-meaning friends are like, oh, we've been eating wheat for centuries. You know, it's only recently we've had some problems. I think it's a big fad, you know, that people are going gluten-free. It's such a fad. This fad's going to pass. And, you know, they don't understand about what's happened to the wheat. And there's a lot of misinformation online about, you know, is wheat GMO or is it, you know, the same wheat our grandmothers grew up with? And if it's not, is it because of the chemicals? So awesome that this film came out because it answers all those questions, and it's a great way for me to educate my patients without necessarily having to do, you know, a two-hour lecture myself, which is kind of dry and boring. And with all the wonderful pictures and the animation, explaining leaky gut, and there was definitely things on the film that I did not know. I did not know what PEP was. But I was like, hey, this is really cool. So I was really excited. The minute I found out about it, I contacted my assistant and asked her if we could get the filmmaker on the radio show. And yay, she said yes. So I'm so excited today that we're going to have Cindy O'Meara on the show. And let me tell you a little bit about Cindy before I formally welcome her to the show. Now, Cindy's a nutritionist, and she's a best-selling author and international speaker. She's also the founder of a company called Changing Habits. And her special interest is ancestral foods. Now, at the end of her degree in nutrition, she has a Bachelor of Science majoring in nutrition from a university. She was so disillusioned by the nutritional guidelines that she ended up paving her own path and steering clear of what was very popular in the day, including when I was in medical school, which was telling everybody to eat low-fat diets. So that was very controversial, especially back then. A little bit more, you know, popular now. But her groundbreaking book, Changing Habits, Changing Lives, which was published in 1998, became an instant bestseller. And from there, she's grown a very successful organic food company, certified online education program she's created, and, of course, this groundbreaking documentary, which we really, really need. And her greatest love is to teach people, to help people make better choices. She's a very good teacher, as you will see when we tell you about the website and some of the programs that she has to help people get their lives and their bodies back into health and back into shape, you know, through food. She educates people how to read food labels, why diets, quote unquote, don't work, how drugs can affect your total well-being. And so the nice thing is that having been a teacher for so long, she really focuses on simple and achievable steps. Because sometimes I know that look when patients look at me and they're like, you want me to do what? You know, and sometimes I really just don't have time to walk each person individually, step by step, over, you know, 5 or 6 weeks, how they can go gluten-free. Like, if I decided I was going gluten-free, I could do it in a day or two and just completely wipe out my whole house of all gluten-containing stuff, because being an MD and educated, I look up stuff online really fast, and I'm a really fast learner, but not everybody is like that, and so people will sometimes need this kind of help. So I really appreciate the work they've done. And the website, by the way, for this awesome movie is whatswithwheat.com. There's no apostrophe, so it's whatswithwheat.com. And I'd love to welcome to the show Cindy O'Meara. Hello, Cindy.
Hello, Dr. Karen.
So thankful that you have, I know you're calling from many thousands of miles away, so really appreciate you taking the time out to speak with me and our audience.
And I thank you for that beautiful introduction. Yeah, I guess it's been a very, very long ride to get to this point right now. And it's amazing that I've created this documentary that a lot of people like you, Dr. Karen, who are saying, I'm going to show my patients this. So, that's a very big plus for me, because I created it because I believe what was happening the general public needed to know about, but I didn't know that it could be a resource for doctors like you who don't have the time to explain it and don't have the time to explain how to make those changes. So I'm glad we're poised to do that, to help people like you as well as many other practitioners out there that are saying the same thing as you.
That is perfect. And in the movie, you describe a bit about your own journey, and I think it's really important for people to connect with what you went through and, you know, how you got to be who you are. So maybe you could share a little bit about what you went through personally, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I think it's good to go back just a little bit before I went into a little bit of a crisis in health, because I'd never had a health crisis. So I was born into a family where many of the members died young. So my mother's the oldest of 11. She was born in Iowa, USA. She had seven brothers, and six of them were born with hemophilia. So that was in the 1930s, 40s, 50s, and even my uncle was born in the 60s as well. My last uncle was born in the 60s. And they were in the middle of corn farming, where the beginning of the chemical revolution started. And there was no genetic predisposition to hemophilia in our family before that. We knew our heritage. We went back five generations, and there was nothing. My belief is that perhaps the chemicals that were being sprayed may have changed the genetic predisposition of my grandmother. You know, I can't prove that, but that was just it. I had cousins with dysphagia, type 1 diabetes, aunts that died from liver disorders, breast cancer, three aunts with breast cancer. My mother, she passed away from mesothelioma, or lung cancer. My sister passed away from CREST. She was born, she was the first born and born in Iowa, USA. So she passed away from an autoimmune disease called CREST, diagnosed in the early when was it, the 80s. So I just went, I have to look after myself. I have to eat the best that I can possibly eat. And so I studied nutrition and cultural anthropology and anthropology and went about eating foods from scratch. Didn't, like you said, I didn't agree with the dietary guidelines. When my children were born and I have three very healthy children, I gave them the best of foods. I made everything. I was in that kitchen doing everything. I never bought packaged foods. So it was a little bit of a puzzle to me that by the time I hit my late 40s, that I started to get this constant low back pain. And my husband's a chiropractor, my dad was a chiropractor, my sister was a chiropractor. So I got this constant lower back pain that just wouldn't go away. It was for about 18 months. And then I started to get hip pain that when I would be sitting for quite a while and then stand up, I would be in a lot of pain until I warmed up and was able to walk again. And so I was thinking, does this mean hip replacement? And getting anxiety at 3 in the morning for no reason. Everything was cracking up. I'm getting dry skin, headaches, migraines, the whole lot. And I just decided one day that I wasn't going to live like this and that I was going to do the best that I could do and eliminate as much of the foods that may be causing an issue. And so I did an elimination where I just ate lean meats, green vegetables, winter fruits, and only minimum amounts. And in 3 weeks, I had lost 9 kilos that I had gained over a 2-year period.
Wow.
It was just dropped off me like there was no tomorrow. 4.5 kilos in the first week, which, wow. you know that's water weight, so inflammation. Then I lost any back pain, hip pain. It all just disappeared. Anxiety, clarity of mind just came to me. It was like I had an epiphany at day 10 and it was like I could feel where I was in the universe. It was one of the most amazing feelings of my life. And I started to reintroduce the food back into my diet. And slowly but surely, I put in more vegetables and more fruits and nuts and seeds. And then I got to grains. And the first one was wheat. And as soon as I put the wheat into my mouth, basically, within a 24-hour period, I had gained 700 grams in weight. I had my lower back pain back. My brain was foggy. The hip pain came back and I went, what was that? And so then that was why I went on this journey with wheat. I thought, with my knowledge of anthropology and agricultural revolutions and hunter-gatherers and even the Australian Aboriginals, you know, where I'm from in Australia, they ate grain and they ate grain for, they believe, around 40,000 years. There wasn't a gluten in their grain. They ate a type of millet. Actually, there was a type of oat. Now, whether that had the gluten in it, we don't know. We're still looking for those traditional grains. They were agriculturalists, even though there's a belief around the world that they were hunter-gatherers. So I knew that grain was an important part of us becoming where we are right now, as far as being able to stay in cities and grow lots of food. And that journey propelled me to create the documentary. And it was a journey of the history of food because I feel that the history of food is very, very important and how we use these foods in our everyday lives and then where what's happened to it and where we are right now. And so that's what the documentary is all about. And it's just what I learned as I continued to read people's books, listen to their podcasts, go to conferences, I guess that's how it all came about.
That's amazing that you did that elimination diet and within a very short period of time, you were able to get rid of all those symptoms and all that weight. I mean, if that is not incentive enough for someone, I don't know what is.
Yeah. Well, what was amazing is I never gained that weight back, and that was 5 years ago. So it just never came back because I just stayed away from wheat. But I still eat the grains. I've been able to, in the first couple of years, I was very cautious. But I now introduce some of the grains back into my diet, and traditional grains such as quinoa and amaranth and rice. So I have introduced grains back into my diet, but with no issues with any joint pain, any weight gain, brains as clear as a bell, no anxiety whatsoever. And I'd never had anxiety until that 2 years building up to me doing that elimination protocol.
Gotcha. Now, some people will say that, and you just alluded to this just a little bit ago, that we have ancestrally been eating grains for quite a while. And why is it now that we're seeing, now of course there's other toxins in our environment, of course, but why is it now that people are having wheat issues and they didn't have that, 200 years ago or 10,000 years ago? What are some of the main key points that you have shared in the movie that people can take away?
Well, there's lots of things that we can look at, but I believe in the last 15, 16 years is when the crisis has really been hitting. Even though back in the 80s there were some people that were having a struggle with wheat and dairy, and many naturopaths and New Age thinking nutritionists were saying, look, just go off those foods and see how you go. So there was, you know, that build-up in the 80s. But in the 60s and 70s, when I was growing up, everybody ate wheat. Not many, you know, like there weren't many people with those issues. There was a couple of celiacs out there, but not like we're seeing today. So I think it's that all of the cascading events that happen from the refinement of wheat to us eating more wheat to it's in everything, it's in our cosmetics. I even saw a show the other day where they make doors from wheat. I didn't realize this.
Wow.
So, yeah, they're starting to use the wheat that they're producing, which is over an abundance of wheat in many areas of our life. But I really believe that our movement away from our evolutionary body's way of dealing with the world and our adaptation is where the real problems are laying. And while we don't go into those lifestyle issues, we do go into importance of the microbiology of the soil and the microbiology within our body that helps us deal and adapt to the environment quicker than our genetics could ever allow us to do that. And what we've seen over the last 16 years probably, that I've seen, and more so in the last decade is when I'm really starting to see it, is that we have an erosion of people's microbiome, their microbiology within the gut and their skin and everything. We're having an erosion of that, and that could be due to antibiotics, could be due to a lot of herbicides are being sprayed, and we do allude to the herbicide glyphosate, which disrupts the shikimate pathway, which in turn disrupts our microbiome as well as many other functions in our body. So, you know, what was the catalyst that just threw the javelin so far that we can't even get back to the beginning of it was, I believe, the increase in the amount of chemicals that we're using on the environment, in the environment, on our bodies, in our bodies, and the disruption in our food in the way that they're making foods that aren't really food. They look like food, taste like food, smell like food, but are food. And that's many of the shelf-stable packaged foods that you see in the grocery store. And many people in the US, in Australia, they go to the grocery store, they don't think anything of it. They don't think that anybody would put anything in a package that's going to kill them or poison them or make them sick. And while they may not feel sick as they eat that food, it's that constant eating of that food that slowly degenerates their health until one day they go, oh, I've got a sore hip or I've got a sore back. Let me take an anti-inflammatory. They don't consider
right.
that it's something they're consuming.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And, you know, for people, I mean, sometimes, and myself included, in medical school, very naive, and the thought is, at least here in America, that, well, if it's on the shelf, the government must have tested it, and it must be tested safe. So those pesticides, herbicides, they're very, very tiny amounts, whatever it is, parts per million or billion or whatever like that, it must it must be safe. So, you know, why do we have to get so, you know, whatever, controversial about it? So there's definitely people like, oh, it can't be that bad, you know. What do you tell or teach people about that?
Well, I think it's an accumulation. And as Dr. Stephanie Sinnett says in the documentary, she says, you know, there's a memory and an epigenetic pass on through the generations. So if we look at the 1930s when they sprayed in the Midwest in the USA arsenic and lead in order to destroy the plague of locusts that had come through the crops mm-hmm. of corn and wheat, if we look at that was the beginning of it really starting. And then DDT was sprayed in the 40s, mainly 45 that started. And then Silent Spring came out by Rachel Carson, who warned people in 1960s that this is what was happening and to be aware. And as we go through the decades, we see that many sprays come and go. And you'll see glyphosate will go. I was talking to a farmer recently in Victoria, in Australia. And he said to me, I'm noticing that glyphosate or Roundup is just not working on my fields. And the makers of Roundup have created a new generation of herbicide. So we're going to see glyphosate go out as everybody starts to learn about what it's doing to the human body and the microbiology of the soil and the destruction of our food as far as nutrition goes. We're going to say, oh, well, we've gotten rid of that now, we've banned that. But then they're going to bring in another generation of herbicides that may even be worse. And I think what has to happen is that people have to wake up. They have to take the blinkers off and realize that some of our government departments are being swayed by food companies, chemical companies. They're not aware. Like I look at, we're in the middle of an election like you are, and I look at the policies and they haven't got health as a huge policy. Yes, they have health for emergency departments and more hospital beds, but they're not looking at prevention and they're not looking at the big picture, because without health, our generations that are going to come to us will be our leaders, you know, up through the ranks. They're going to be our leaders and they're the ones that are not going to be able to think clearly or have anxiety or have depression. They may have things like this. They may have physical disabilities. So if we're looking at the big picture, we actually need to say even the smallest amount of these chemicals can affect the genetic potential of a baby. And I just think, you know, when people make comments like that, they're not really educated to the full extent of what is happening on the planet. And I think we're just living in our own little world and not considering the big picture. But having said that, we have to clean up our own backyard. We have to clean up ourselves first. Then with maybe we will be able to influence our family and friends. And with their help and support, we might be able to change a community. And especially within our own councils, can we stop them using these chemicals and go to steam killing of websites as opposed to websites of weeds, steam killing of weeds as opposed to using chemicals. And then with that, there might be a cascading effect, you know, effect to other communities, and we may be able to change countries and perhaps even the world. But I'm listening to many scientists at the moment through podcasts, lectures and conferences and symposiums and summits, and they're all saying the same thing, but the public aren't hearing this message. So, you know, with your radio show, Dr. Karen, and hopefully my documentary, we might wake a few people up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that is definitely my hope. And you know, the other thing or myth, I don't know what you want to call it, but then the other folks are like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm definitely do not want to, you know, eat pesticides, herbicides. So as much as I can, I will buy organic wheat. Now, there were still some issues with organic wheat, especially with certain types of people. So maybe you can address a little bit of that, like maybe, or just because it's organic does not necessarily mean that someone isn't going to react, because wheat apparently has changed over the last however many, you know, decades.
Yeah, look, it has. And there's many different wheats out there. There's many varieties to deal with the different environments. So When the 1970s came, Norman Borlaug manipulated the hybridization of wheat from different countries, and then of course more chemicals will be able to be were able to be sprayed on them. So there is that. There's also clear field wheat that we don't even address in the documentary. I just felt that that may just tip people over the edge. But Clearfield wheat, which is made by a company called Bassif, is being planted throughout the US, and I believe there are some in Australia at the moment. And when you see how that is manipulated and what chemicals they use to do that, look, I'm cautious, very cautious about that. So there are many different breeds to grow in different environments that... may have the gluten on different genomes. Dr. William Davies talks about that in his book, Wheat Belly. So what was happening is that I was only eating organic wheat. I made all my breads from organic wheat, and yet I was having issues even using organic. There was a study just recently done where they've got traditional wheats, and the traditional wheats are wheats like spelt, einkorn, emmer wheat, and kamut. So if we go back to the traditional mono, or it's a monoploid, which means we know that that was the beginning of the grain. That was about 23,000 years ago, and that was called einkorn, and that's spelled E-I-N-K-O-R-N. Then around 17,000 years, a grass naturally hybridized with einkorn, it created emmer wheat. Then from emmer wheat, it went to kamut, and from kamut to spelt. And so these were our traditional wheats. And there was some research done where they had 20 people, 13 women, 7 men. They split them into two. Half of them got the Triticum mestivum, which is our modern wheat, the one that was made by Norman Borlaug, and the other half got the einkorn and the emmer wheat, the very old wheats. And it was a double-blind crossover study, and what was interesting is that they asked the participants how they felt with their gastrointestinal problems, mind, you know, they asked them these questions. So that was very, very much based on their interpretation of how they were feeling on these different grains. And what was more interesting is that they took blood samples and they took their inflammatory markers within their blood. And what they found was that the people that were taking the traditional wheat, their inflammatory markers were almost non-existent versus the inflammatory markers for the people that were taking modern wheat were very high. And this is only a small, you know, study. It's only got 20 people in it. But I'm hoping that more studies will be done on this. So if people are saying, oh, I can just have organic wheat, I would take them just one step further. Go to your einkorns and your emmer wheat, as well as maybe your kamuts and perhaps your spelt, and make sure that you do an old-fashioned sourdough bread as opposed to the fast, you know, one-hour raise yeast breads. But then there are people who cannot even tolerate those. So I was talking to Alicia Fasano, who's working on this at Harvard University, and he's basically saying we don't have biomarkers to understand whether you can eat these or you can't eat these. The only thing that we can do is we can eliminate it and see if your symptoms improve. And then if you're not a celiac and you don't have wheat allergy, then perhaps in 6 months, 12 months, you could attempt to try these old-fashioned wheats. And I do know in the US that there are people that are producing these old-fashioned wheats, and they are in England as well, in the UK. And in Australia, we have this wonderful farmer in Victoria who produces organically a beautiful emmer wheat, which we actually buy from him, grind, stone ground, and sell to the Australian market. So I know it's available around the world, and I know when I was bringing my children up, so my children are in their 20s now, but if I knew this when I was bringing them up, I would have definitely wanted to give them the emmer wheat and the einkorn wheats as opposed to any of the modern-day wheats, as Triticum mestivum.
Yeah, it is wonderful, though, because of international commerce or even, you know, internet marketing, that we have access to them now. Like, you can actually just Google those things and find people that are selling the heritage wheat, which is awesome. And like you said, and you know, Sally Fallon talked about in the film, that the way that traditional peoples who were healthy prepared them, that they would do a traditional sourdough, which would take days. I mean, not a lot of work, but it would take days to actually ferment, and therefore the wheat would be pre-digested, and very, very different from the quick-rise wheat that we have on the market today. Even in the bakeries, you know, the organic bakeries, it's the regular, you know, fast way of doing it. People don't really sell, except for my friend who's a W.S.N.A. Price chapter leader. Nobody else sells, you know, that real sourdough bread. Mm-hmm. So it does take more time, definitely more effort than going to the store and buying it. But if someone is absolutely in love with wheat and doesn't have, you know, those, you know, symptoms and like you said, we don't have great testing for it right now, then that is a better option. Now, you don't know this about me necessarily, but as an energy healer, I can do some what we call energetic testing of my patients. So we will actually tap into their higher selves, and other people call it the subconscious mind, and we can actually ask that higher self if they are intolerant or tolerant of wheat, and if they are tolerant, what is a safe dose for them, and even which wheat variety would be, or how many months it would take to heal the leaky gut in order for them to try wheat again. So we can keep asking these questions of the body, and interestingly, the body will give us those answers. So that is our way, since we don't have really great objective testing, but it seems to work. And you know, my husband, who's very gluten sensitive, has become less gluten sensitive because he basically stopped for quite a while, and now he can tolerate wheat, although some of the sources where he gets them from is not my favorite, you know, but he can tolerate it without any major issues. But he knows if he eats too much of it, then he'll start getting symptoms, and then he knows he has to back off. So he definitely isn't as strict, you know, as I am, but it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, Dr. Karen, the body is so smart, and we have stopped listening to it. And I love what you're doing, because, you know, we've stopped asking the body. Like, my dad's been a chiropractor for 55 years. He's always asking people's bodies these things. And
sure.
I just find that this is the old traditional ways that we did things. We, through culture and tradition, we learned these healings. In the Aboriginal world in Australia, they were masters of healers. They did a laying over of hands that would remind the body as to how it should be, as opposed to trying to fix something. They just would remind the body. Like, when you look at these ancient cultures and their healing, and even their manifesting, the way they, the Aboriginals would manifest food, if they were on walkabout, as they called it, they would sit down and they would thank the animals and plants that would come into their life that day in order for them to live another life. So they manifested their food supply on walkabout, and their healings were second to none. But we've destroyed that culture and that knowledge, and they don't put it in writing. It is to be passed down through generations. And the energy healing, like, I know the American Indian was also amazing. And I've just been in Peru, where there's lots of energy healers around. So it's so exciting that you do that and get people on that path.
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate the validation. And as an interesting thing to you, and you may have already seen this in others as well, but sometimes, you know, you talked about in the movie about this microbiome, this microbiology, this amazing, you know, 7 pounds of other organisms, you know, in us, the number of cells that is much more than the number of our cells in our physical body that are living inside of us, and how healthy they are. You know, they themselves have a consciousness. And when they get out of balance, I have actually noted that sometimes there'll be, say, a fungal infection or overgrowth of fungus or mold or parasite, that the consciousness of those pathogenic organisms will show up in the patient's disposition, and their personality will be very different. Until which time we kind of release that consciousness or, heal them. I was talking to another Cindy, Cindy Dale, another energy healer and intuitive, and she said, yeah, she says, you know, I had to have a conversation with this Epstein-Barr virus my patient had. And then we had to do kind of a little compromise. Hey, okay, we'll give you a little bit of energy, but that's it. You know, if you keep, you know, attacking this person, she's not going to be around long enough for you guys to survive. So, you know, so it was really interesting having this relationship with even a pathogen and being able to, in my case, you know, release their consciousness or whatever toxicity they have. But this whole microbiome is so cool that, like I said, your movie is, you know, one of the first ones that is made for lay people that they can start to understand how important, you know, the gut is to that second brain, how the wheat can affect it, and then, you know, to heal. You know, to heal that gut and some of the choices that we have. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about one of the special programs you have that I was interested in, and I'm going to promote that on my website, and it's called 6 Weeks No Wheat. So if people are interested in that, they can go to KarenCan.com/wheat. Just really simple, KarenCan.com/wheat to take a look at that program. So maybe, Cindy, you could tell us a little bit about what that program is and how it can help people.
Sure. So what happened is that as we were doing the documentary and, you know, just talking to people, I realized that we probably needed to help people through having no, you know, eating no wheat, because most people's diets just is compromised by the fact that they eat so much wheat. So they may have breakfast cereals in the morning, they may have a cracker at afternoon tea, they'll, for lunch, they can have a sandwich, and for dinner, a pasta or a cookie at afternoon tea. And they don't know anything different because this is the way they've been brought up. You know, they do, like you said in the beginning, they look at you and they go, well, what am I going to eat? So we created the program because we thought there will be some people that really do need to have their hand held, remembering that we don't want to be drastic with some people who are just starting out on this journey. So all we've done is cut out wheat. There are some people that will need to cut out more. This program does not do that. All it does is put them on a real food diet and help them on their journey to cut it out. We also educate through it. So we talk about bread, we'll talk about, you know, certain foods that they're eating and give them alternatives to it until they're, you know, beginning to understand how they make substitutions. And as you hear Chef Pete Evans say in the documentary, getting rid of wheat, you are open to so many more foods because all of a sudden you have to become more creative in your breakfast. So this morning I made up went out to my garden, I made up a big salad. So that's my bread. So I just put out lettuce and I had some kale and all my beautiful herbs at the moment. So we're in our winter at the moment. And I put some tomatoes down there. Then I threw down avocado and I made up some pesto. And then I coddled some eggs. So, you know, bring it to the boil, let it sit for 6 minutes in their shell. Then peel them and throw that on there. And then drizzle it with olive oil. So even thinking about it and talking about it. It's beautiful. So these are the things that we teach you. And you don't have to have a garden. But, you know, lettuces grow wild, so the tomatoes, mate, they keep reseeding themselves. My herbs are like the biggest weed garden ever, but they're there. So we just talk about how you do this in a step-by-step manner. And if they want to start with, you know, a gluten-free bread, what are the ingredients that we look at? Because some gluten-free breads are done well and others aren't. So we educate them on that. We educate them on ingredient reading, because most people read the nutritional label. They'll look at what fat content, what sugar, what salt, what protein. Well, we just dismiss that side. We want you to look at the ingredients. So it's not only just giving you a diet and recipes and how to do it, it's actually educating you through the processes so you know why you're doing it and you will stick to it, because that's what I found, is that once you take the blinkers off, make people aware, educate them, they're more likely to keep the changes happening as opposed to do it for 6 weeks and then it all gets too hard and I don't want to do it anymore. I want people to continue this. I've just given it as 6 weeks, because if you go lifetime no wheat, people just go, well, I don't want to give up my bread. But if you give them 6 weeks, then it's a step-by-step change for them, and then they can see whether they feel better or not. And if they don't feel better, maybe they need to go further. And so that we have other programs that do that. And the the program that helped me and that I did was the Four Phase Fat Elimination Protocol that we do. It's a very, very strict program, but it gives the results for people who are having real issues with food. And then we teach how to heal the gut, you know, and go through that. But to begin with, the 6-week no wheat program will help people just, you know, just take wheat out of the diet very simply, without much fuss, and teaches them about organization, looking in their pantry, what do I have to get rid of, etc.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it seems to me, you know, if you have that one focus, then it does seem to me less intimidating, I think, for people than to say, okay, I want you to get rid of these 25 foods.
Exactly.
You know, which is sometimes, you know, they look at me like, oh, don't tell me anymore. I don't want to know. But, like, for example, I have so many, there's so many people with autoimmunity, as you know, people with diabetes and, you know, they're overweight and all these kinds of things. And when they go to the regular registered dietitians, they don't get, well, you know, the kind of education that I want them to get. So, you know, I look at their plate, like I look at what my dad, who's a diabetic with heart disease, what they fed him in the hospital after his heart attack, you know, 2 white hamburger buns with this hamburger. There was 1 piece of lettuce, and at least there was a tomato. But it was like this Jell-O, and I can't even remember what else. But I was just disgusted. It was awful. And we ended up bringing him, I think, homemade soup, you know, bone broth, something like that. And he says, oh, thank God for real food. You know, but seriously, here's someone who just had a heart attack who's a diabetic, and you're going to feed them white, cheap hamburger bun? Really? You know? So, and my patients will sometimes, well, they'll go to the trainer and they'll get all, you know, they're exercising, they're pushing their bodies and all this stuff, and they lose weight, and then they gain weight, lose weight, gain weight. But then, you know, they're going out to eat at night and they're having lots of bread, lots of wheat. They can't help it because they, you know, the bread's free, you know how it is, or the alcohol. And so I think the program, the 6 weeks no wheat, is really great because it's a good time, like you said, that it's not so overwhelming. You're taking stepwise, you know, actions, and you're getting the reason why you're taking that action. And so of those of my autoimmune patients, I mean, one of them was so gravely ill, she didn't want to be on medications or have her thyroid irradiated. So she said, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm really going to do this now. I'm really going to do this diet. And she did. And it's an amazing, you know, success story. But she was the one that was willing to do that. You know, to go gluten-free, to go wheat-free, and actually start eating whole foods, not the packaged gluten-free stuff, but whole foods, and she's healing her body from the inside out. So,
It's wonderful. You know, your message about the hospital is that they are sending a very powerful message to people. Continue to eat the way you're eating. Had nothing to do with your heart attack or your diabetes. And they need to step up to the plate. In my way of thinking, there is such a disconnect between our health and food when it goes to hospital food. And we have an amazing doctor here in Tasmania who works in a hospital. He's an orthopedic surgeon, and all he does is cut off limbs, basically, from diabetes. And he is trying in his hospital to change the food. So we've got a long way to go, but I guess we've just got to take baby steps at this point, you know, change our habits bit by bit, step by step, and make them solid.
Yeah, exactly. That's great. And for everyone listening, again, the website for the film is whatswithwheat.com. And if you want access to that 6 weeks no wheat program, go to my website, karencan.com/wheat, and you can learn all about it. It's really, really excellent. And so, Cindy, you know, last words, things that you want to say to encourage people on their journey, any other information you want to share with us today?
Well, I guess the only other thing that I'm hearing from you is that, you know, you're busy in your practice, and there are a lot of doctors like you that are all busy in their practices. And one of the things that that I've done is that I have created also, and I can go through your link as well for this, is I've created an education program to teach not only professionals but the layperson the basics of how to change someone's diet to a real food diet. But it's a 12-month course. It's not a course that you can do in a week. It's actually a 12-month evidence-based online nutrition course that will help people become educated for themselves or educated in order to help their community. And these people now, I have chiropractors here in Australia that are contacting me and saying, I need some of your graduates, Cindy, I need them to come in and teach, you know, my patients on how to clean out their pantry and things like that. So we have always been about education. We're poised, ready to educate anybody who wants to learn the power of food and the power of the human body and the importance of our digestion in order to change their own health as well as their community's health. So I want to thank you also, Dr. Karen, and being part of, I believe, the tsunami of change that's happening in the world that will help our future generations and especially our children at the moment because they're really, really struggling.
Absolutely, and the millennials are some of my favorite patients to mentor and to help, and nutrition is a really big deal. So that is fantastic. Thank you for mentioning that program. I will definitely add that to my webpage, the link to that special program as well, so people can have a choice, you know, of what resonates with them. Thank you so much, Cindy, for spending your time with us, and again, congratulations for a wonderful documentary. It is definitely one, you know, we're keeping in the office and showing people. So awesome, awesome.
Thank you.
Okay, and thanks everyone for listening in. Until next time, bye for now.